Hi, I'm Matt, because I'm doing a sequence break, and usually Josh talks first. And hi, I'm Josh, because actually Matt isn't on the show with us.
And
he is the phantom in our opera tonight.
He is the... And actually, this works either way, because I was going to make a joke about... I wrote down one of the lines from Phantom of the Opera, and then I was going to use that at Matt's expense, but now I can actually use the one from Cutting Class at his expense. This is Charlie Down in Austin, and Matt is the custodian of our fucking destiny.
He sure as hell is.
Because there's and, poetry this week, ladies and gentlemen. Spoons. There's three movies worth of poetry.
And, you know, I feel a little bit like Martin Mull just crawling through the swamp with an arrow in him. Because this is Harshaw Hot Dog. So our short this week was Pingu's The Thing, or also known as Thingu. This was a short that was created by Lee Hardcastle, who's known for a couple of things. I think he did Tears for a Toilet from ABC's One. Which I didn't like very much, but it was animated very well, so he do knows what he's doing. And this is just an episode of Pingu, if it were just telling all of the major plot points from The Thing. And it's kind of great.
So I had a very funny experience watching this one.
Long story short.
It's like, I was watching it, and then I was like, watching it, it's kind of cool. And then Conlon kind of looks over, because I was just watching my phone, because I was just in the middle of doing five things, and so I was watching my phone. And Conlon looks over, and he's like, oh, it's Pingu. I'm like, wait, what? He's like, yeah, it's this Pingu. Like, what? He's like, yeah, they got a whole series of them. They're like from like Switzerland or something. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. This is like... It's like I've just been bested by my child knowing a thing. That's not how that goes.
So I guess this was pulled from YouTube after a copyright claim, but then John Carpenter tweeted it out and said, this may be better than the original. And so it's kind of keeps getting reposted to YouTube whenever it gets pulled. I think for good reason. I think this is really fun.
Well, that kind of jives with Carpenter's sort of general thumbing nose at it's kind of institutions. Sort of like it seems to be his sort of his bread and butter. So it would make sense to be like, no, it's copyrighted. Blah, 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 blah. He's like, meh. And I don't care for your rules. So I think it's very charming.
And it's kind of like after they pulled. Maybe think of when they pulled Commander Hadfield's cover of Space Oddity, and David Bowie was like, nah, it's good. It should stay up. And so he got him to put it back up. That's only David Bowie can do. Yeah, everyone should watch it. It's goofy and fun, and it's nice to see how they managed to capture the essence of some of those scenes with a cast of penguins and no dialogue.
Except for the little penguins going,
The thing that gets me every time, and I don't know why, is whenever something's on fire and it's like the cardboard cutouts with just like, or construction paper with just like two little frames of animation back and forth. It's just, it's great.
Yeah, there's something very charming.
Makes me happy. People should watch it.
There's something very charming about that. If I can rub two brain cells together, there was this one years ago at South by Southwest called, I think it's called either like Holiday or 365 or something like that. And it's basically like, little 1 second animated shorts for every day of the year. And so they go in really fast succession. So it's just like one, two, three, and they just go through. And it's just little things like, it'll just be like an alien going, and then the next thing is like a flower going, ugh. And then it's just like four dogs dancing, and then whatever. Okay. It just keeps going. And then every once in a while, this guy pops up and he's just like, holiday. And it's like he's going on holiday different places, different times of the year and stuff. And it's like, and it's just fucking mesmerizing to the point at which, like, I've watched it a few times and I was thinking, like, man, this guy was trying to sneak in subliminal messages to kind of mess with my head. Like, he will have succeeded. And it's just like, you just kind of just get hypnotized by the fucking thing. It's just like, oh my gosh. I don't know if it ever made it online anywhere. I gotta poke around. If I can, I'll put it up. I'll figure out a way to put it up for the hot dog site. Just, it's not horror-y, but it's just, it's really neat and very creative. And I think it's kind of cool.
And after watching it, and you had a sudden urge to drink your Ovaltine?
Yes. Yeah, and send in the box tops for a decoder ring.
and kill all humans. Like, oh, what?
Although, it's funny when you get it later in life, you know, you watch Christmas Story a bunch and he gets a Dakota ring and it's this big twisty bit and it's got a brass color and it's got some pointy things and a turny bit, whatever. And then you get later in life and then you watch, like, Kronos and it's like, kind of feels like the kid from A Christmas Story could have really fucked up his Christmas and, like, you know, been a vampire, the whole goddamn situation. Ron Perlman shows up and this is a very complicated situation. All he wanted to do was get the Dakota ring.
That would be a vast improvement on that movie.
You know, that is one of those
just weird to have ones. Ron Perlman show up and to get your dry out, kid.
That is one of those yes, weird ones, indeed. Isn't it one of those ones that, like, your relationship with it changes very dramatically when you get older? You know, it's one of those ones that's like it's just not the same movie now. It's very weird.
See, I only saw it once when I was maybe in my teens, and I fucking hated it. It's like, this is so cynical and grotesque and dark and has no heart to it. It's so, you know, shrill and unpleasant. And it just, the whole thing was just like rubbing a cat's fur the wrong way for me the entire movie. It's like, this movie fucking sucks. And I've never seen it again. Huh. So, like, maybe I just wasn't at the right age to grok the humor of it. But I was so repulsed by it, I've never even tried again to watch it.
Huh. I think it's interesting to look at. I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting in relation to, if you think about Bob Clark doing Black Christmas, and you think about it in those things, because, like, you know, when you first became aware of the idea that he did Black Christmas, it's like, wow, that's a hell of a thing. That's amazing. And then you go. But and then you go back and watch Christmas Story again later on in life, and it's like, oh, now I'm starting to see between the lines here, you know. So it's sort of like, it's interesting for that for sure, I guess, you know. It's sort of, otherwise it's just kind of loud, and now I just kind of associate it with, like, you see those, like, leg lamps things that they sell everywhere, and then, like, and the Red Ryder BB gun magnets and all the rest of that stuff, and it's just like, we will eat ourselves alive with plastic things.
People are kind of obsessed with that movie in a way that I can't really grok, I guess. In Vegas, when we were there recently, Aaron ordered like a 24-ounce mimosa or some ridiculous shit, and it came in a glass shaped like the leg lamp.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Complete with a real fishnet on it? It was very confusing to me. But so she has that in her house now.
Well, naturally.
Here we go. But between that one and Elf, like, every Christmas at work, we have a movie day, and I'm like, what should we watch? And, like, half of the people go Christmas Story and half go Elf. And I was like, okay, Christmas Story I've seen and I fucking hate. Elf I have never seen, and every scene of it that I've seen, I've hated.
You know, I was very much that way until I sat down and watched it. And now I really like it.
I know, at some point it's going to happen, and it just didn't happen this year, you know?
It's just, part of it is sort of like, it's like, you know, it's the Will Ferrell kind of comedy. It's like whether or not you're in the mood for that flavor that day. And I think when I finally got around to actually seeing the thing, then I was like, okay, yeah, this is pretty nice. It's ridiculous, but it's like, it also has Mary Steenburgen, and how can you, nobody can dislike her.
No, it's fundamentally impossible.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Especially if you listen to the Good Place podcast and you hear Ted Danson talking about her, and that is just wonderful.
Yeah, she's just like, I actually just rewatched, I've been doing this thing with Conlon where, so, like, this is difficult to admit, but I feel like this is a safe space. I really like romantic comedies generally.
Yeah.
I just really, sure, really enjoy them. And I've seen damn near all of them. And, you know, there's just ones that I really enjoy. There's ones that are, like, very, like, warm, cuddly blankets. You know, stuff like, was it Sweet Home Alabama? I really, really love, of course, Blast from the Past. And just, like, you know, a lot of different kinds of stuff. I just really love romantic comedies. But, like, so what I've been doing is I've been picking bits and different ones to show the kid at different times. And he's like, yeah, it's kind of surprising that these are actually pretty decent. I'm like, yeah, see, that's the thing. They're not bad movies, really. You know, like, they're just sort of like, you know, you just kind of take them at what they are and you just kind of go with it. And so this last weekend, we watched The Proposal with Ryan Reynolds and Sandra Bullock. And it's like, in and of itself, it's not.
Oh, yeah,
it's
like, I kind of, okay, like that one.
But it's like, has Craig T. Nelson, Mary Steenburgen, Betty White, Malin Ackerman. And it's just like, I mean, come on. You know, Mary Steenburgen playing the mom, and it's like, oh, for God's sakes, you can't beat that. So yes, I've admitted that. It's just I've got on my. I feel lighter, you know. I feel lighter in spirit, really, that I've admitted this.
Between that and the teen comedies, I have no real ground upon which to stand if I am impeachable on somebody else's taste in movies.
Well, you know, the thing,
because I sit there having to go like, well, Can't Hardly Wait was super underrated and everyone should watch it, and shut up.
Well, I think what...
And Josie and the Pussycats while we're at it.
Yes, that is, and that is a fun one to revisit too, especially if you haven't watched it for a while. It's like, that one is a hoot to go back and watch, because it's like, God damn, is that smart.
My wife has never seen it, and I can't convince her to watch it.
How is that possible?
I don't know what to do.
She is of the cloth of which that is cut to make that dress. Pete's sakes.
I know. It's bizarre. She refuses.
I think one of the... Outside of living in Austin just in general, and, you know, meeting folks here and kind of getting involved with the, you know, kind of movie scene, and then, you know, of course, meeting Kristen sort of worked out pretty good. You know, the other thing that I really think... was one of the greatest benefits of living in Austin has been being around a lot of movie people. And there's a fellow here in town that shoots a lot of stuff and does a lot of editing and does a lot of everything. One of the programmers for Fantastic Fest, his name is Luke Mullen. And you'll see his name pop up in credits and stuff, because this dude's working all the time, or shoots commercials and does all kinds of stuff. You know, very busy fellow, but very, very down to earth, very genuine kind of a guy. But like him and one of the writers that used to write for Harry Knowles a while ago, Alan Cerny, a couple other folks that have just been around, you know, festivals and stuff like that. You listen to them talk, and it's like, I learned many, many years ago now, it's like, there's so many cool movies, and like, a lot of them are just, they're not good, but they're like really cool. Like, you can really enjoy what you're going to see, and you can enjoy the dumbness of it. You can enjoy the fun of it. You can just sort of turn your brain off. You can turn your brain back on again. Like, it's okay to be really into art house stuff, but then also really enjoy the Fast and Furious movies. And you can take things for what they are, and you can take things out of them and whatever. And so, like, I think that's one of the things that, like, has been most beneficial, actually, is living here, is just sort of like having just really, really expanded my ability to just appreciate all the stuff. And it's like, I'm really glad for that, because it's like, it makes it more fun.
Yeah, well, it starts by getting past the idea that your taste in music or movies says something about your value as a person, which is where I was in my 20s, where it's like, oh my God, if you listen to Limp Bizkit, that means that you're inferior as a human compared to me.
Yeah.
Right? I like all this weird, edgy, you know, art house movie shit, and if you like blockbusters, then that means you're not as smart as I am. And as I've gotten older, I've come to realize, like, I don't give a shit if, like, I'm no longer worried that I'm not smarter than other people, so I don't have to try and find ways in which I'm superior to them. And then you start to realize, like, none of this shit is really quantifiable. Like, it's great if you listen to classical music and enjoy it. If you can't listen to it and you think it's boring, that doesn't mean you're stupid or stupider than me. It just means you got a different take on shit. So, yeah, it's nice to kind of settle in and just like stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just kind
and
of
let other people like stuff.
It's kind of a pleasant place to be. It's like, yeah, this is cool. And then I can watch the stupid romantic comedies and just have a fun time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I will continue to say, like, for example, get your ass to Captain Marvel, because I just saw it, and
oh,
it's
my
amazing.
God, is it good?
You should go. And if you don't like it, well, if somebody else doesn't like it, then that's fine. But Reginald, I just agree. And I'm also perfectly willing to say something is hot garbage, but I'm not going to sit and argue with somebody about it. You know?
Well, I think it does depend. So,
you like the Twilight movies?
It does depend on your motivations, though, I think. Like, if you went and go see the new Captain Marvel movie and you're like, yeah, it wasn't really for me, like, I didn't really dig it, whatever, like, it wasn't really my thing, that's fine. Like, that's okay. But if you're like, fuck every person that made this because they're jamming down this women's rights, blah, 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 future female.
It's SJW
yeah,
bullshit.
Yeah, it's just sort of like, if that's your motivation, then just, I'll cordially invite you to go walk into a lake. Preferably in the lake in Prescott, right, where they filmed Creepshow 2, because then you'll get a rash.
That was weird. Somebody posted how they were getting ready to go see Captain Marvel, And someone, like one of their friend of a friend's posted on that post on Facebook, like, yeah, the movie's going to be garbage. She's such a C-list character, and I don't know why anybody would be interested in seeing that movie. And like, dude, no matter what you think about the character, you're posting this on somebody saying how excited they are to see it. Why would you do that? What is to be gained?
Yeah, that's the switch of it, right? It says, like, why, like, what purpose does that serve exactly? Like, it's sort of like you've gone out of your way to then kind of, you know, I don't know, sort of put that out in the world and, like,
basically make somebody feel bad.
Yeah. Well, that's a great way to say it, actually, Joshua. That's kind of what it is. Cause I mean, people take that, you take it personally, you know, you kind of like, you know, like, was it that movie, that Jeremy Piven movie a long time ago? Was it PCU or whatever? Where, you know, they threw that reference about, you know, wearing the name of the band of the shirt of the band you're going to go see or whatever else. And, like, don't be that guy or whatever. And, like, it's one of those things where I've thought about that for way longer than any human being should ever do that. And it's like, and I think maybe it's just another one of those things about getting older where, like, you know, being a touring band, especially in the state of the music industry, is really hard. And it's sort of like these guys tour constantly. You know, they have to. And that's when they make their money from merchandise and other kinds of stuff and touring. It's like they're making money from releasing records. And so it's kind of one of those things where, like, if I wouldn't bought a shirt the last time I saw a band and then I'm wearing that shirt and then we're going to go see them or at a festival or something like that, like, fuck you if you're going to judge down for me, whatever else, because that helped them pay their rent. You know, it's like, be an adult about it, for crying out loud. It's just sort of like, I don't, you know, whatever. It's just there are better things in the world to get your panties on a twist about, for Pete's sakes.
So let people enjoy things, unless the thing that they enjoy is shitting on other people and who are trying to enjoy things, in which case they don't get to enjoy that. That's what I'm saying.
That's why, yeah, those trailers about the everything wrong with and, you know, those type of the stuff. Like, there was, I gave a little lesson to the youngins at my workplace a couple months ago about that. Cause one of the guys in operations was like, it's like, yeah, I watched a few of those videos. I'm like, don't do it again. Well, why? This is kind of funny. It's like, let me explain to you why. Because this guy's a pompous asshole who has no education or background in film whatsoever. He has been accused of sexual harassment by multiple people. He has milked people out of a bunch of money. And what they're putting out into the world is bile and spit. And it's more fun to plant trees and flowers and listen to music than put bile and spit in the world. He's like, well, that's true. I'm like, yeah, I know. So I was like, I made his life a little better because now he doesn't have to listen to that fucking idiot again. So, you know. So, yes, we have decided, Josh and I have made the decision. That's how it's going to be.
And to be honest, though, I like the honest trailers because those tend to be a little bit more on the clever side. And it's not just shitting on movies. Like, you can watch them for movies that you enjoyed and there will be some jokes in there. So I'll have to give them that.
That's a little different.
Those are
that's
at least vibe. Half as long as, you know, yeah. The CinemaSins thing is just like, all this is clickbait for you to find the movie that you don't like and go in there and go, yeah, see, told you that movie was bad. There's fucking plot holes in it, bruh. There aren't any plot holes in movies I like.
Yeah, it's funny how that works.
You know how there aren't really any plot holes in Cutting Class? There's just a weird unraveling of plot, I would say, if we're going to, you know, talk about movies, horror movies on a horror movie podcast just for a bit.
That's true.
This is what happens when Matt's not here. He's not like, hey, fuckwads, let's talk about a movie.
Yeah, so oddly enough, he's the one that sort of has that organizational prowess, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but, you know, such as it is.
Right. We all have our roles. Like, you have all of the knowledge about, like, the background of movies and the history of movies and how they compare to each other because you've seen them all, like, all of them. And then I have the ability to remember what movies we've seen for this podcast and the titles of them and the actors in them. And then Matt is the one who just actually makes it so we do a show. So, hey, well, our powers combined, earth, wind, water, fire, heart.
It's true.
Blood, sweat, and tears. Anyway, Cutting Class, cortando clase. There's probably something less literal than that, but cutting class.
So this is one of those ones. This is just another one of your basics kind of. Yeah, this is your basic kind of slasher setup. You know, where you have the red herrings, and then you have some other elements in it. But it's also one of those ones where, for whatever reason, it's like. I don't know. I think it's really fun to watch. Like part of it is the novelty of the watching Brad Pitt in this ridiculous thing. It's the same thing as seeing Clooney in Return of the Killer Tomatoes. It's like you're like, oh, look at that, oh, son of a gun. You know, it's like so. There is that. Right. There's that novelty. And I love Jill Schoeland. I can never know how to pronounce her name right. She was in quite a few things over the time, although she's not treated particularly well, and that's good Lord. There's a lot of lechery to be had.
There is a lot of creepiness in here, and some of it comes from our good friend Ruddy Patel.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. You just, This is one of those where you just kind of feel bad for the human race, and on the one hand, and on the other hand, you can kind of celebrate that we've come at least. We've made some progress since 1989, because like all of this girl's teachers hit on her when they're not just like physically picking her up and moving her to a different location.
Well, not just hitting on her, like nothing's
and
subtle.
And then her boyfriend is a total dickwad, and
hey, there's no part of it that's subtle. It's very much just sort of like it's like yes, for a young lady with the having a body and whatnot, and you well, it just you know, therefore I need to touch your shoulders. It's like wow. Golly!
I'm thinking maybe you should stay after school.
But I do. So there's little elements that make me enjoy it. One of which is the whole subplot of like him being put into, or one of the characters being put into the mental institution and getting electroshock therapy and whatnot. And it's like it's never really 100% clear as to like why necessarily.
He killed his father.
Well, yes. But also that those records would be at the school.
Well, there's that.
In terms of like,
well,
that's,
of course,
that's more what I mean. Like this idea that like, oh,
well, that's the permanent record. Like everything,
well,
everything has
record.
To be permanent
record. Think about it, of course, the permanent record. God damn, I didn't think about it that way. No, but I mean, like, it's like it's this whole thing that this reveal of like, oh, well, then this is the thing that happened, and then this the lady, the father was the one and put him into the thing, electroshock therapy, whatever else. But now he's you know like better. And then we have all the medical records at the school, and then he's just sort of part of the general population at your typical American high school. That's more what I mean. It's just like, all right.
Yeah.
And then, like, Brad Pitt is super angsty. Also, Brad Pitt does not know how to play basketball. Like, I mean, I'm not the world's best athlete. I never went too far playing basketball, you know, but it's like he looks real silly trying to play basketball. He looks just real goofy.
What got me in this is that, like, when you hear Brad Pitt is going to be in a movie, you have the expectation that he's going to be, like, the nice guy. And he's just such a dickweed. He's the, like, total 80s boyfriend who at the end is revealed to be the killer through the whole movie. And that's what was so weird to me about this, is they start with a kid comes back from the mental institution and he's got crazy guy stare, you know, and he's just unpredictable and he's creepy. And meanwhile, Brad Pitt is our all-American boy, but he is also like borderline abusive and super shitty and, you know, jealous with his girlfriend and everything. So it made sense to me that the reveal would be Brad Pitt's character is the killer and he's setting up lunatic guy because who would suspect? And he's constantly giving shit to lunatic guy through the whole movie of like, yeah, you used to be my friend, but you know, you're crazy now. Nobody could ever trust you because you're crazy. And then at the end, it's just like, yep, he was crazy. Brad Pitt was right. And nobody should ever trust anybody who's been in a mental institution. Like, wow, that is a moral to your story. That is definitely a different way to take
it. Well, and then also take it. Also, there's that scene in the car. Repair shop or in shop class or whatever else, where it basically makes the idea, it kind of floats the whole thing of like they were buddies growing up and now Brad Pitt is cool. And then when you kill your dad, you go to a mental institution, get electroshock therapy, that makes you a nerd. And it's just like, so they're going to be friendly in private, but then in public, it's like, I'm going to be picking on you and whatnot. It's like, huh, That's interesting. So I mean, that's more my enjoyment of this comes in. Is just like, it's like this roller coaster of nonsense. It's just, and also some fun kills too. There's the little flagpole thing with the obnoxious gym teacher on the trampoline. It's like that's super good. Like,
yeah, as a victim of obnoxious gym teachers growing up, I enjoyed that scene.
That's pretty good. I like that one. Also, this has one of the more lovely moments of that kind of like pulling back the shower curtain. Ooh, like oh my stars! Where like he's going through the back annals of the building and like moves a thing of costumes, and then Roddy McDowell's standing there with like a Carmen Miranda fruit hat and like a shawl. He's just like, "What are you doing here?" Was that even in the movie, or was that just Roddy McDowell just screwing around?
We'll keep it in.
No problem. We'll keep it in. And it's just like, what? So it's just that's really my enjoyment of it. It's just this like weird tonality that just doesn't. I don't know. It's just, and then they kind of get into like Frankenstein bit for a little bit of like, oh, let's Brad Pitt's going. Like, it's him, he's the killer, and then chase him. It's like, all right. And then it calms down for a little while, and it's like, it just goes up and down, and up and down, and up and down. And it's just sort of like, it's almost as if, like, if you've ever been watching something on television, and then you get sucked into something on your phone momentarily, you look back up, you're like, wait, oh, that was still going, wasn't it? I'm like, oh, bugger, what the hell happened? Like, huh. It's that kind of thing, where it just seems to kind of drift in and out of its own awareness.
For sure. There's a moment where Killer Guy rigs up the entire school with some sort of surveillance and the ability to selectively address classrooms over the intercom, which I thought was amazing because that came out of nowhere, that he had taken the time to rig up the whole school. I did appreciate the detail, though, in one of the rooms, instead of the regular like speaker from the 1950s, it was the plastic speakers from like a shelf unit stereo, the kind that had the detachable speakers. Because I remember seeing that in schools where they had like the one from the 50s had just broken after, 800 years. And so they just like grabbed one of the teacher's stereo units and wired them up. So that was cool.
Also, I would love that science teacher. To show up in like 500 more movies, because that guy's ridiculous in the best possible way. Like,
this is our little buddy Sodium.
It's just sort of like, it's like, and then he pulls out, the best part about that whole scene is he pulls out this gigantic chunk of it, He pulls out the little chunk of it and whatever else, and then he like holds it up all triumphantly, and everybody's like, yeah! Clap, 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 clap. It's like, all right.
And then he's like, no, we're only going to use like this little bit. But that sets up later on where he sprays the water all over the floor and then hucks the big 5-pound hunk of sodium at the floor to get bad guy, and nothing happens. And the guy just goes, "That's not sodium."
Naturally.
For sake. The special kind of special at work. Because having gone out of the way to establish that sodium has basically become C4 when you add it to water, which is not really
what happens. I didn't think that's what happens. I'm pretty sure that doesn't how it goes.
No. But, there are those moments in there. There's this whole finale that takes place in the auto shop, which reminded me that schools used to have auto shops, which is kind of interesting. But then it's just like endless attacking each other throughout the auto shop with random tools that are never quite as deadly as they probably ought to be. And ending with him trapped in the vice grips and just the running gag, I guess we have to call it, of Righty Tighty Lefty Loosey. And almost ends up getting his head crushed.
Well, and also the transcendent terror of table saws. Because, like, fuck those things. Like, it's just... It's just tailor-made for cutting people bodies. That's what they're for.
They call that pulling a Johnny Cash's brother.
It's cut in half real bad.
Yeah, I have to confess, like, I have a table saw that I long ago took the guard off the top of it because it is a piece of shit and it just kind of fell off. And every time I use it, I do kind of think of, like, Final Destination style. If I were to, like, slip on the floor and just fall forward, yeah, that would just put a gouge down the middle of my knee. That would be pretty much the end of it.
Yeah, just sort of like, it's like, do you generally have sort of a chest cavity flap? Like, no, it's a new feature I've just added. Huh. It's funny you mentioned about the Final Destination.
No, with chest cavity
flap. It's funny you mentioned the thing about the Final Destination movies, because, like, freaking, like, I did that thing last year where I just watched all of them in, like, 2 days, because I have the little box set of all of them. And so I'm like, you know what? I haven't watched these in a while. I'm just going to go through and watch them all. And so I watched them all in, like, about 2 days. And then it was, like, for 2 weeks at least after that, I was, like, just super jumpy. Like, every time I did something, you know? And then recently, our hairdresser lady, the lady that cuts me and Conlon's hair, she started at one place, and then she moved to another place. And so we stayed with her because she knows what she's doing, and we like her. And she just moved to this new place. It was up North Austin. Much older, kind of much more laid back, not hipstery, cool kind of place. It's very kind of community neighborhood kind of a place. Like they have like, it's like, say this the right way, but it's like a black and white men's salon where it's sort of like they have a lot of, you know, people come in and get fades and stuff, and then like all this kind of stuff. And but it's like it's kind of this community joint, and they've got like all this great memorabilia on the walls and whatever. But they also have a couple of like these really old looking fish tanks. And so it's like, that's what popped back into my head as we walked in. So this fish tank is like, the thing drips down that way. So he steps on it and slips. And then they've got like the electric razor in their hand, and that falls. And then that hits somebody in the foot, and he goes, and then throws the really sharp scissors, and then thunk in my eye. Like, that's how that's going to go. And having that entire thought while I'm sitting here waiting for my haircut. God damn you, Final Destination.
Yeah, all of those are worth watching. There's not a one of them that has no redeeming qualities.
Like. No, they're really just, and then like two is the one with the as far as the big accident, you know, like one is like okay with the plane, sure, you know, but then the second one with the logs, the log going through the cop car is, and then later on with the lady with the bob hairdo, with the PVC pipe and the airbag, like that is just, I mean, this sounds awful to say, but that's just brilliant. That's just utterly brilliant.
Yeah.
just unbelievably well constructed and thought out. And
oh, that is the one where she hits the... Is that the one where she hits the tree and then she has the thing like inches from the back of her head and then the airbag goes and...
Yeah.
Just kind of punches the limb that's sticking through the tree. Yeah, good times. So this doesn't have... The Cutting Class doesn't have quite... that level of energy, right? And it's, I wouldn't call it like a big, big fun. It was kind of fun, but it wasn't like, it didn't make me go, hell yes, like everybody should see this. You're just like, oh, that's Brad Pitt. And then it just kind of bumps along for a while. And then you go, is that really, that's a bold choice to just have the kid who went to the mental institution be the killer. Okay. And you kind of wrap it up. I was glad that they picked up Martin Mull at the end and he was okay. I wonder if he owed someone money or just the director was a buddy. Okay, so Martin Mull is in this, and you know, Martin Mull, not really known for his horror. You know, he's not a scream queen, really, but he's the heroine's dad. He goes out hunting at the beginning. He gets shot by an unseen attacker with a bow and arrow. And we just occasionally cut back to him dragging his ass through a swamp, calling for help. And then at the end of the movie, when hero and heroine are pulling away and they find out that Crazy Kid has cut the brake line to the car, Martin Mull comes staggering into the road and it almost becomes a very different kind of finale. But then they manage to avoid him and then, you know, put him in the car where they then forget they don't have brakes and keep driving. So it's a really weird extended cameo from him.
Well, and also they even at one point the science class goes into the like the marshes or whatever, and then like he's like laying in the reeds, you know.
Yeah.
He's and then they're like, yes, yeah, it's a bullfrog.
And they're like, oh, it's the mating call of the gentle bullfrog. Yeah.
Oh golly, you know, it's stuff like that to kind of, you know, just kind of, you know, just sort of. I'll say it this way. I will take stuff like this over the Redbox Drek like, I'll watch shit like this all day long in comparison to that kind of stuff. Like, which I know, you know, it's like, yeah, it's not really like a ringing endorsement, but I think it's fun.
What would your number be on this guy?
Oh, well, I would say, you know, like it's not like the, it's certainly not the slowest or clunkiest of the 80s kind of whodunity slashery type things, you know, certainly it's not the slowest one, you know, and it's not like some hidden gem either, but I certainly wasn't bored, and I enjoy it, and I like the lady that plays the lead in it, says I always like see her and stuff, and she's kind of fun to watch, which actually kind of a funny tie-in, because she was in that Phantom of the Opera that I did in the 80s, like in the late 80s, and it's like...
The Robert England one?
Yeah, she's in that
one. No, who knew?
And so I was like, oh, Pete's eggs. So, yeah, so, I mean, like I say, it's just... I think, to be fair, I would say, just because of my enjoyment of it, I'd say like 5.5. Yeah, I think that's fair. I'd say 5.5, like 5.5, yeah. 5.5 out of 10, 5.5 out of 10, 5.5 out of 10. Shouldn't you be bouncing a ball somewhere?
Yeah, I wouldn't, it didn't hit me that high. It's not like a Wraith level of interesting and weird. I think it's not quite out there enough for that. So I would say 4.5 out of 10. Salute the flag as it goes through your chests, possibly, or just Brad's pit. If he had been impaled on the thing, it would have been a Brad spit.
That's true.
And that would have been great. Anyway, that's true. No one can take that away from me. By the way, watching Captain Marvel, it occurred to me that Jimon Hounsou is the black Brad Pitt. He has very, very similar features in the same way that John Boyega is black Matt Damon.
Yeah, I could see that.
So eventually you're going to be able to assemble like an entire just color swapped cast of Ocean's 11. You just have to find a white Bernie Mac. We're good to go.
White Bernie Mac, like down the brain races.
Yeah, tell me, folks, if you ever encounter a white Bernie Mac, just let us know. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back with Phantom of the Opera. So next up we have the Phantom of the Opera, or El Fantasma de la Opera. Just cause. And this is the original 1925 version that... It can be frustrating if you're somebody who wants to watch the definitive version, the version of something. The definitive version. Because, like, Amazon has a pretty decent resolution copy of it, but it's all black and white. And the original had the tinting on some of the scenes, and then it had a couple of scenes where it was almost full color, where they did the multi-layer painting of the negative. It's like the scene where the Phantom comes down in his costume, he was in red. And the Amazon one didn't have that. So I went to YouTube and I found a version that had the tinting. It had the tinting on every scene, which is super annoying. Like,
yeah, but that one's resolution is better than any of the other ones that are on YouTube are like varying degrees of.
Yeah, the resolution was good, but then fuzz. Like the daytime scenes were pink and yellow and just like, and. That one had a dialogue track added where, like, it was subtle, but in the dancing sequences, you could hear crowd noise. And occasionally there would be a line or two of dialogue, like when the two guys go and find the Phantom in the box for the first time, one of them goes, "Let's throw him out." And I was like, you can't just dub your own shit into the movie, YouTuber? What are you doing? Damn it. So, despite that, though, this is pretty amazing spectacle-wise. I think you have scenes that have...
The scope of it is ridiculous.
15, 20 ballet dancers, yeah. And going, like, think about what cameras were like back then. Having to film some of that shit is kind of amazing. So... I mean, like, I don't have a lot to say about it. It's impressive. as far as the technical aspects of it. Like, it's really hard to connect with the drama of it, given just the difference in culture. I will say that makeup is still fucking horrifying. It is no less horrifying for it being older or, you know, obviously some appliances and stuff. Like, he looks grody.
Well, it's also pain. That's the thing, like, you know, I've learned a little bit about and actually, just as a quick aside, if folks are interested in looking for interesting podcasts to listen to, besides the one you're listening to now, thank you very much, You Must Remember This is the Rian Johnson's lady friend whose name I cannot remember off the top of my head, which is real bad because it's, I don't like to make it so like, oh, it's Rian Johnson. This is chick he hangs out with. She's well accomplished in her own right. I just can't think of her name. It's on hiatus right now, but she does, it's like a kind of history of old Hollywood. And she had a whole big old stretch of episodes. I think it was like six of them, called, Bella, excuse me. Called Bela and Boris, about Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff. And then she talks about even earlier stuff and talks about, you know, Lon Chaney Jr. and stuff. But it's just really deep dive into these type of things. And there's a documentary about Dick Smith. But then, like, they talk about how, like, if I'm not completely pulling this out of my butt, I think Lon Chaney built those apparatus. Mm. That he wears, like, if I'm not mistaken, I think he built them. I'm fairly confident that's what the deal is. Like, he was, and they're like, they're made of like plaster and like, it's like rocks and, you know, gravel and like, it's just heavy, uncomfortable, painful, you know, just not, I mean, not, this is not, these are not like silicone sort of like cast pieces and stuff like that. I mean, this is like just some heavy, heavy hardware just wearing around. And so, you know, I kind of like to have that in the back of my mind watching something like this, because then you go, man, like, this is a thing. Like, what's the other Lon Chaney one? Was the ghoul? I think that's another one where he's got like all this shit on his head, and it's like, man, just God, that must have hurt like crazy. And so it's sort of like, I wonder how much of that plays in the performance too, just being in a lot of pain, just wearing all this kind of stuff on your head. But that's, I just, sure, think the scope of it is the thing that really blows me away, because it's like, you know, everybody knows the scene, you know, where they're all chasing him, and he does the thing with his hand, and then they're like, huh? And he opens up his hand, and he's like, ha, nothing. I'm like, I gotcha. And it's like, that, everybody knows that scene, you know, you see that shot of him, or the first reveal of him, whatever. But there's a lot more movie in this, and it's just like, the scope of it is amazing. Also, for 1925, like, there's a sequence where they show like the silhouette or the shadow of the guy being, of the guy hanging. And it's like, man, from a content standpoint, like, that probably gave some people the vapors. Like, that was dark. Sort of like, man, oh man. And there's some of the scenes of the catacombs, like, they're creepy. When they go down into the sewers and stuff like that, like, it's, I don't know, it's got some neat little moments to it. You know, but you can't get away from the rhythm and the pacing of it. I mean, it's sort of, it is absolutely of another era.
It is hard to, you know, it's hard to watch a silent movie for 90 minutes. And that's not the silent movie's fault at all. It's just, you know, it's how it is. You're just like, oh God, I need dialogue. Just somebody say some shit, but not some YouTuber who decided to dub it in afterwards. It's no good either.
I do love the introduction of the new management team for the opera, because they show these guys and they've got that thing where they have to wear all the heavy makeup in order to be seen on camera, you know? And so they all look like a bunch of silly drag queens, for starters, with all the big eye makeup and stuff and all the big expressions and all those type of things. And it's just, so that's just a spectacle in and of itself. Plus, they're, as I wrote down in my notes, like, it's like the new management of the opera are all to be monocled. We must all be monocled. All the monocles.
Well, you can only be rich, like, enough to buy a stake in an opera theater if you have a monocle. You have to be monocle rich.
Well, what about glasses? No. You really show your status by only having one lens.
Yeah, I paid twice as much for half as much sight. That's how rich I am.
And then the other thing, I love the description of the Phantom. And he said, they said his face is like leprous parchment, yellow skin stretched drum tight over protruding bones. And I was like, man, that's a that's something else. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. Now, one thing I was gonna ask Matt too, because Matt's not here, so screw him. But I was gonna ask if you guys had ever had a chance to see silent films like in a theater.
No,
I've seen
a few,
like not a lot, but I've only seen a few. But it's a heck of an experience. Like they had the Clara Bow film Wings here in Austin years ago, and they had it with a full like orchestra. And that was amazing. And then I saw one at Stanley Film Festival one time where they had this kind of experimental music thing going with it, and that was super wild. And then also they did a restoration of it. Criterion did a while ago. One of my favorite silent films, which is The Phantom Carriage, and they did that one with like a kind of a mini orchestra, and that was incredible. But knowing how I fall asleep and stuff all the time, like I don't know they could do that very much. It's like every year during the summer they do the summer film series here in Austin at the Stateside Theater and at the Paramount downtown, a beautiful old theater. And but they'll have some stuff in there, like some older films, you know, and so it's like, oh, that's really neat. And then it's go like I might be able to go, and like, yeah, but it might just be a thing where I'm paying for a nap because it's just sort of like
you know, at this stage of the game, paying for a nap almost makes sense.
Yeah,
if it's a matinee, you know. Yeah, so it's hard for me to really dial in on a silent movie for the runtime of it, even if it's Nosferatu or Dracula or this, which is fantastic. I was surprised how much of just the story as we know it makes it in there. It's like, oh, there are scenes from the musical Phantom of the Opera that are directly taken from this. I think even more so than the novel, because I read the novel a long time ago, but it seems like some of the plot points are coming straight from this to the musical version of it. So that was interesting. But,
well, and then I kept thinking of the Dario Argento Phantom, which, you know, if you've never seen that, that's an experience.
I want to see that.
It's wild. It's wild. It's worth. I think it's worth seeing. It's not ever boring. It's just sort of like wow, this is an event. You know, it's an interesting story. I think it's tricky. I will say this: like, I'm glad that we watched this. I think it's cool. I would love for somebody to have actually done a restoration worth a goddamn. That's really, really worthwhile. Like, a super clear, like the beautiful restoration that Criterion did for The Phantom Carriage. Like, it's really neat. And so I would have loved. I don't know if it's even physically possible anymore. I don't really know, but I think that would add to it. But I think part of the thing is, like, when you fast forward it to now, there's so many things that are just inherently silly in the setup of it that you have to kind of like, you know, like that movie with Meatloaf a while back, The Stage Fright. You know, like they tried to, you know, do that.
Right.
And they tried to do sort of a kind of a loose adaptation in there, and you know, there's certainly ones that have tried to get the thematic elements, but I think it's, you know, I think it's tricky to pull it off without it seeming kind of goofy, in a way. So I don't know how you fast forward it to now and make it click, but it's just, there's something inherently interesting about the whole thing. You know, and then you get adaptations like Phantom of the Paradise. So, right. You know, it's all over the board.
It kind of, yeah, watching this and then just searching for it to try and figure out which one to watch made me realize just how many of them there are and how many of them I kind of want to see. Because there's a Hammer Horror version from 62. There was the one with Claude Rains in 1943. There's this Phantom of the Paradise. There's the Robert Englund one, which was fucking ridiculous.
That one is crazy.
He is kind of he's Freddy. He's a demon in addition to being the Phantom. That was fantastic. And then there's the Argento one. So I think the Argento one and the Claude Rains one I definitely want to see. If you haven't seen the Joel Schumacher filmed adaptation of the musical, don't. It posits that Gerard Butler can sing, and Patrick Wilson is in there just being an American in the middle of things. It's like, yep, I'm Raoul. Oh. What's up, lady? But Emmy Rossum is fantastic in it, but the rest of it is just hot fucking garbage. So this one's better.
I did, if I remember correctly, Joshua, if I remember correctly, and my memory's hazy, but if I remember correctly, we watched that together. And
that's entirely possible.
I made a pretty good joke about the bed, the big swan bed, and then the boat, and they're out of race car beds. So it's something, I have a vague memory of that. But it's sort of it's mired back there somewhere in my file cabinet.
So you're going to
suffice it to say, you wouldn't be bored watching it, but you also are going to like enjoy it either.
You see, like he puts her on the horse to ride like 4, maybe 5 feet down a tunnel, and then he's like, "Now get off the horse. Now get on the boat. Now get off the boat. Now get on the bed. Now we turn around." Like, yeah, there's a lot to unpack. When he has a little tiny mask, the better to see his Gerard Butler face. And when he takes the mask off, he suddenly has a gigantic deformed area. So, I don't know. There is a point at which he is holding on to like a church steeple in the rain, singing his little lungs out, and he has giant CGI spawn cape. Just cause.
Oh yeah, Jesus Christ, you're right.
So yeah, somebody needs to come save that. And maybe the Annie and the Apocalypse guys. Just come in and make a very grounded, groovy version of it. Yeah, it could happen.
Oh, that's a good idea.
For now, yeah, like this one it's hard for me to rate something like this because I think it's very well made and I didn't enjoy it all that much. Except, you know, like in pieces you go, "Oh, holy shit, that's a huge amount of extras," or "Oh, that's really cool makeup," but on a whole, you know. So I'm just going to be fair to it. I'm going to say 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10.
I'm definitely in the same boat. It's sort of like it is basically impossible to rate because you're not seeing a version that's been cleaned up and has been, you know, color corrected the proper way and stuff. And, you know, I will say, though, that if you're going to go watch it on YouTube, there's like 3 or 4 versions of the black and white one, of varying degrees of fuzziness, and then the one that's got the color stuff on there is actually probably the most clear one that's on there. It's about the same clarity as the one that's on Amazon, but it's just sort of like maybe there's just another version around that's much much cleaner and easier to see and stuff. But I think for the average watcher, it's going to be heavy lifting just because of, you know, how like there are certain parts where you're like, wait, what's happening? Oh, yeah, okay, I guess walk up the stairs. Like, okay, I gotcha. You know, so there's that part of it, too, which, you know, at least to my eyeballs, it kind of wears you out for a little bit of time. You just can get a little worn out to the eyes. But I think it is worth it. And if there is another version that's around that's better cleaned up, then certainly it'd be worth watching for sure. So I'll say the same. I'll say 7 out of 10. I will say 7 out of 10, Floriette, a property man. Because that tickled me to no end. That is maybe just describing somebody as their name, comma, a property man. Like, ah.
A slave? Like, no. He owns property, you see. Actually, looking through the Wikipedia, I may owe Victor Murillo, the YouTuber, an apology, because it looks like in 1929, they re-released Phantom of the Opera into theaters with a synchronized soundtrack that included bits of dialogue.
Holy cow.
So that may be just the actual thing. Because this version that I'm looking at has all the gels on it, but then it has the one scene, the party scene, where they did like the painting on 4 different negatives and smashed them together with science to make it so like there's a full color sequence in the middle of this movie, but it's hand colored.
Holy mackerel.
It's kind of unbelievable. Yeah, so maybe I'll post a link to that version in the show notes, because that's really cool as hell. I'm watching it now. I should probably stop watching it and make our show instead. So, but Phantom of the Opera. So finally we have Sequence Break, or Rompiendo la Secuencia. This movie is 2018. It's from our buddy Graham Skipper, who is... been in the, like, 9 out of the last... Well, he's been in, like, 10 of the last 50 movies we've watched, I think, looking through it. It's like, holy shit, he's in that one, and that one over there. Like, Beyond the Gates.
You mean Chase?
What? No, the director.
Well, Graham. Yeah, sorry. I misheard you. Yeah.
Yeah, so Graham is in a ton of shit, and Chase is as well, our lead. And they were both in Beyond the Gates. Graham is best known for looking kind of like Daniel Radcliffe. Very strange. But yeah, it seems like there's this kind of indie horror group of folks who are just kind of in each other's movies all the time. Like, he was in All the Creatures Were Stirring and Downrange and Beyond the Gates. Well, I guess it's kind of
in Tales of Halloween, too.
Tales of Halloween.
And then Mind's Eye, which we've not done. And then he was in what's his ass's movie? Oh, golly, it'll come to me. Shit, biscuits. Mickey Keating's movie, Carnage Park, the one that's got Pat Haley in it. He's in that one, and you know, it's just like, so yeah, he's kind of, you know, got into doing some stuff, which is kind of cool. And this has got our pal Fabian Therese, who's in Southbound, is in all the other things. She's also in this really fantastic movie that like, just fucking nobody saw, and it just disappoints me to no end. She was in this movie a couple of years ago. It was called Teenage Cocktail. And it's like these two girls that have a very close friendship, relationship type of thing. And then it's like they kind of make one decision to kind of rip off this guy for some money. And then it just sort of like things just rapidly descend into a bad situation. And it's like, and that one's got Pat Healy in it as well. But it just starts off one thing and then just sort of really takes a turn. And it was like, and unfortunately, just, you know, for whatever reason, some stuff just doesn't get out or whatever. And I really liked it a lot, and I've always been a fan of hers. And she's a really lovely human in real life, and so, you know, I've always really liked seeing her pop up in things.
Yeah, it is good to see her in this. So Graham is Chase, our hero, who probably has a different name in the movie, but me. Is a dude who works in an arcade game, like, refurbish and retail shop, where he's the, like, apprentice to the owner of the place. He fixes up old games and scavenges old parts to make video games, to fix them up so they can sell them, gets a motherboard in the mail, and puts it into a box and hooks it up and discovers it's a game that is really pretty groovy vector graphics. Like, I kind of wanted to play it, but is a David Cronenberg-esque thing that if you play it too long, you eventually start. And to put it gently, fucking it. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair.
In various ways, like, not in super literal ways, but in the, like, oh, the buttons have become so soft I can put two fingers right through them. Or, you know, the joystick has engorged itself in my hand and now it's spitting white goo. So it's,
Yeah, that's just kind of icky. Like, it's just, it's just, there's something viscerally unpleasant about the feel, the look of that. Like, Cronenberg always nailed that down. Like, it was just like, when you just get the thing in Videodrome where it's just like things just are squishing and you're just like, ugh.
Mm-hmm. This owes.
It's just like, it's foul.
This definitely owes a debt of a stylistic debt to Cronenberg. But they're pulling it off, I think, for a large part of this. They have these sequences where he starts playing the game and then slowly, even the first time, it took a while for me to even see what was happening. It's like, has the joystick gotten bigger? Is the joystick now like a marshmallow and he's sinking his fingers into it? Oh, that's, ooh, yeah. Eventually, like, the entire console changes into like a rubbery, geegery thing that instead of pushing buttons, he's kind of flicking nipples. And it's all of that to me was great. I was entirely there for all of those sequences. That was amazing. What do you think?
Well, yeah, no, I think they, so here's the thing that, like, I think this is the dividing point with this one, is that, like, all that stuff really does click, it does work, and it does feel gross and feels unpleasant, you know, and all that kind of stuff is, there's, it really gets you. But part of the thing is you have this thing with the game where the game, like, has completely entranced this, like, transient sort of fellow who, as it turns out, is like, was involved in making the thing, as it goes along, and he's like kind of murderous and crazy and obsessed with the thing and all this kind of stuff, and that all feels very Cronenbergian, which is fine. However, the other thing that feels very Cronenbergian is that, like, Fabian Teresa's character, who is interested romantically in Chase Williamson's character, it's like, once, like, he's kind of twitched out by the game and is having difficulty discerning reality and having these weird breaks in his head and this, like, weird dreams and all this crazy shit's going on. But then, like, she just then becomes, like, just like a victim versus having her own weird sequence break where she's seeing stuff and whatever, because basically everything that happens to her is through the lens of the male protagonist, kind of. And it's just sort
pretty
of
much, yeah.
It feels like you missed the chance. They kind of missed the chance to, like, have everybody have their own set of nightmares, so to speak. And I kind of feel like that was a sort of missed opportunity, because she just sort of becomes, like, things happen to her. Like,
yeah.
She's just not really, like, she's not really an active participant in any part of it, really. It's sort of, you know, she gets, like, taken into the game and this other kind of stuff happens, and then she's like being rescued, and then she's this, that, whatever, but none of those things are happening. Like, she's just not an active participant in any of them, and it's kind of a bummer, because she's just kind of like, once she kind of just stares all, like, I think I described it as like staring off like a stoned goose or stoned duck.
Stoned duck, kind of, yeah.
And then, yeah, and then it's like, and then from that point forward, she just has no agency whatsoever in her, in what happens to her, and it's like, and it just really kind of stinks, because it seemed like that would be the chance to really flesh that part of it out, and or have a couple more characters. You know,
yeah, because it's
freak out weird.
I think she starts out. Reality. She starts out okay. She's dangerously close to that, like, dream girl line, where she's just a little too eager to go, oh, hey, you're a total nerd with no career prospects. How are you? You haven't done anything with your life and you're 29. What's up, sexy? You know, but she doesn't quite, she doesn't quite get there, because she goes to the arcade store looking for this game that she played when she was a kid. And she's a total dork about arcade games, which can just be a nice character trait for her to have. And then she and the guy can share an interest, and they can bond over the shared interest. And for a little while they do that. She's like a little too into him for, you know, what I'm seeing, you know, he's just not my type, but it's not too egregious. But then as it progresses, she hangs on him way too much. And she's, you know, she's calling him and he's just being a dick to her and she's not getting anything out of it. I wanted her to show some backbone instead of getting sucked into the game to be the princess to be rescued. And then, you know, and then that's the elephant in the room there, is that the last 10 minutes of this resolve the story in just a profoundly unsatisfying way. So, like, we have our weird guy who seems to have been driven crazy by the game. And then we have Chase, who's slowly going nuts and playing the game longer and longer and having these weird episodes of, you know, losing time, flashes of things that have happened or have not yet happened. And we have a whole sequence where he goes, the screen splits into red and blue, and it's him in bed in both scenes. And we go first for the red scene. In the red scene, he goes back to the arcade and takes the chip from the game and sticks it in his head. And then I gathered, like, becomes the guy who makes the game, who then goes back and gives it to him. Maybe something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
But then we also
that's again why like the only things happened to our main guy. That's sort right. of therein lies the thing, right? It's like if it was happening to multiple people all at the same time and having their own sort of weird freakouts in their realities, then maybe you can really bring that home in a way that like all you know sits a fever pitch. But ultimately, everything is just on Chase's shoulders. Also, you know, when it's all said and done, it's like,
yeah. So as best as we can tell, that's what happens in that timeline. Like he becomes the guy who brings the game to himself in the past kind of deal. And Fabby just is gone. In the second timeline, he gets up, goes to the arcade, gets into the game, gets sucked into the game, and then in the game gets sucked into the game again, which should have been a warning that they're running out of ideas. And then, like, pulls her out of the machine and, like, all covered in oil and something. And then we rewind the entire goddamn movie. And, like, you can see every scene. It's rewinding so goddamn slow. And then he's back the day before they get the thing. And we remember that before he had talked to Fabby about how he's never made a game himself. And she, in the face of no evidence, says, well, you should, because you'd be great at it. She's known him for like 2 days. Like, you can fix games, so you can make a game. Like, you can repair cars. Why haven't you built one? Okay. And he says, you know, I just never, the first thing I do, I want it to be so good, and I know it wouldn't be good enough, so I just have never done it. And, like, here's my demo, but I never hired an artist, so, I just never did anything with it. At the beginning of the movie. So then at the end, after we rewind, he pulls out a business card from a graphic designer and calls him to be the artist so that he can finally make his game and put his game in the world. And it's like, so what we've done is turn this whole experience was just his voyage of discovery, of finding that he needs to stop repairing other people's games and make his own game. And that makes Fabby the person who sends him on that journey, and she serves no purpose other than to motivate him. Like, and that, now it's just that goddamn story of a totally average man baby who has never done anything in his life and just needs to figure out how to. And that fucking sucks because it was so innovative and interesting and gross and weird. And to be, oh, just kidding. Like the story is just this fucking story again. So yeah, that was deeply disappointing to me. What did you think?
Yeah, it doesn't really serve, like, I don't think, you know, and I don't want to put words in his mouth necessarily, but, like, you know, I don't necessarily think that that's the story you really want to tell, ultimately, but then if that's the story you end up at, then that's the story that's the finished product, right? I mean, that's kind of like, well, once you get done, you get it together, and you get everything done, you're like, boom, you get the movie now. And it's sort of like, in this, and we're in this, this is what it is, for better or for worse. And so it's kind of one of those things where, you know, if you're playing around in this playground of all this interesting stuff, you know, it almost seems as though, like, you've already set up all, you've established all this neat stuff, and that's really good, and I think that's really cool and creative. Then it just sort of seems as though, like, then maybe the next step is to, like, take that and then, like, how do you apply it? Because, yeah, I don't think any of these people are insincere. I don't think that they're that's where they're coming from. But ultimately, you can only really judge based on what you've got in front of you, you know? And so it's sort of like, it's even more galling, I guess, because, like, watching her performance, like, she does a great job. Like, the whole first third of it, she's kind of awkward and a little nerdy, like, not to the point, the Natalie Portman and Garden State level of quirkiness, but just sort of like, yeah, she's a little nerdy, a little kind of goofy, like, you know, sort of awkward a little bit and whatever. And, like, she does it really, really well, and she plays it really well, and all that stuff works super good. But then once she's not really a participant any longer, then it's like, well, she doesn't really, like, it's not like she serves too much of a purpose narratively beyond just that core, you know, story. And it's like, well, if that's the case, then it's like, You know, it's like I'm not gonna be mad, but it's like I'm not gonna be super excited either. Especially given like kind of the creative sort of ideas that kind of led up to that point. So you know, it's just kind of like, it has its good points, but I think you really kind of hit the nail on the head, Joshua. Where like, if the core story is that story, then like that's not that interesting of a story. And then is that even worse because there's so many creative elements in there? Like, yeah, kind of. You know, so it's kind of like, you know, where do you go from there? I don't know, you know. But it's interesting. You know, it's interesting kind of a thing. Like, I do appreciate from a Shudder standpoint that they've gotten some things that are original indie kind of stuff that they put on their platform. Now, I will say that I've not really super loved every single one of them. You know, that one Ruin Me was great until it was teeth-gnashingly frustrating at the end. But it's like, it's independent and creative, and there's people putting effort into what they're doing. So it's like, I like that. Like, I'm always a fan of that. But it's also kind of one of those things where it's like, just because of that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to be super thrilled with the story you put together. You know, it's like with Carnage Park is another one that she's in, where like Mickey Keating is an ambitious and hardworking dude. But a couple of his movies I've really liked, but other ones like Darling, I thought was really kind of a good sort of indie drama, sad sort of kind of weird, eerie thing. But then like Carnage Park just plays very A to B, and you're like, when you get to the end, you're like, wait, we're done already? Huh. Son of a gun. And it's like, this is like no middle. It's just beginning, end. Huh. So it's like, I take nothing away from him because the dude works his fucking brains out. But it's also kind of one of those things where like, once we have acknowledged that you've worked your brains on this thing and really put a lot of effort into it, then we got to look at what the thing is you're actually doing. And so like in this one, I just kind of go, well, all right. You know, does this really satisfy something interesting narratively that's going to be creative or kind of new? And it's like, well, not particularly. As you say, it's like, I'm not mad at it, but it's kind of like, I'm kind of mad at it. Like, you know, yeah.
So. I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed. Like, I've seen, I think some of the stuff that Shudder is bringing in for their originals, I'm super glad to have an opportunity to see, you know, stuff like Cold Skin which is great and just didn't really have a home anywhere else. And you know, like I like seeing the indie stuff that's sincere and has some talent on display. It's just, this is a sore spot for me at this point is, oh, don't tell the story that you would have told when you were 20 and you didn't know anything about the world. Like, you're not that anymore. You have to be aware that that story has been done 50 times. If you're a straight white dude who gets the ability to make a movie, you have to be aware that the most boring story you could tell is about the guy who is pretty much the author stand-in, who just needs to believe in himself and follow his dream and, you know, finally get off his ass and accomplish something, and the girl that motivates him to do it. Like, that's just so fucking dull. It's such a thing to graft onto this movie.
Well, you know, and you know what's funny about that is, like, what made me think of it is, I just rewatched Breakfast Club recently. And because I wanted to show Khan then. And it was like, it's been a while since I actually watched it in full. Everybody sees clips of it, you know, all the time, you know, whatever. And you know what's interesting about Breakfast Club is that, like, there are no solutions. Like, nothing is fixed at the end. It's just things are a little better. And, like, nobody is anybody else's savior necessarily, and nothing is necessarily fixed to perfection. It's just that this is a little bit better. And it's like, and there's something kind of amazing and sort of timeless about that. And I really, really enjoyed going back to watch that again a few weeks ago, because it's just like, I've been a long time, but then it's like, we start seeing it in a different light. And so in some ways, like, you know, in this type of a situation, like, was it better to tell that same, like you say, you know, like that same story has been told a bunch, or is it better to just kind of like not really end it and not really have oh, this is the next step. Okay, now we've opened this door. Now we're going to be, he's going to do the next step and make his life better. And it's like, I don't think that that's really the solution, you know? It's like, it's not super interesting. You know, it's kind of like, eh.
Because then you have to, I mean, you have to awkwardly shoehorn in the idea that he's just wasting his time there repairing games when he should be making games. Because, like, repairing arcade games is a perfectly fine and laudable thing to do. You know? People, that's a job, and they say he's very good at it, and he can make money at it, and it's a weird thing to make. It's almost like we wrote this whole thing with this weird video game that does all kinds of fucked up Cronenberg stuff to you, and then you're like, okay, but why? And that feels like he just got stuck. And, you know, I don't know him. Could be that this was his vision start to finish, but it seems like he got stuck. It's like, because it's teaching him a valuable life lesson. Like, yeah, give me something else, you know, give me, it's aliens from the invisible aliens from the planet X who like to do heroin and watch people fuck, you know, like, get weird with it. Cronenberg would never have handed you that Garden State ending, you know?
Yeah.
As much as you and me both, I think Garden State caught us at exactly the right time. We were just the right age, if maybe like a year or two old for it, but not old enough to look at it and go, this is ridiculous. It's like, I've never gone back and watched it again because I loved it. And I just don't care if it's stupid. Its heart was in the right place.
Well, that's another part about that. It's like, I think that is perfectly okay in context, but in the grander scheme of things, like, well, and also I'll interrupt myself and just say that, like, not everything has to have grand purpose, but you also have to have craftiness if you're a crafty person, and any of this crew of people that have worked on various things, like, these guys all hustle their asses off, you know, like, I mean, I think I've mentioned this before, but like, when I see Jocelyn Donahue pop up in commercials, it makes me super happy because it's just like, that means she covered her expenses. She's got rent paid for, you know, however many months, and she's got this stuff covered. And like, she showed up in like a Fitbit ad, and I was just thrilled, you know. And Fabian Therese, the same way, like when she showed up in that Redfin ad last year, a year and a half ago, whatever it was, I was just like, I was so thrilled, you know, because it's just like, that's just hustle. That's just flat ass hustle. So like, these guys have all just hustled their buns off. And so, you know, I take nothing away from that at all, by any stretch of imagination. But because you're dedicated and you're working and you're hustling, then like, just demand more of the story that you're writing. You know, it's like, man, just, you could do it. Just do it, you know?
And like you always say, get another person in.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, that's actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, Joshua, because that's another thing. Like, this also feels like one of those things where, like, if you bounce it off a room full of people, or you get a couple people working on stuff and giving notes and stuff, you may think, you may see stuff that you didn't see before, necessarily, and like, isn't that cool? You know, so sort of, these guys are all collaborator shit. I mean, these guys will, you know,
if ever,
all the time, you know, so, man.
If ever I get my shit together and write a movie, or, you know, before we get anywhere near shooting something, it would be, all right, everyone go through it. Tell me where my cliches are, where my tropes are, and how we can break them without just being like, I'm doing the opposite of the trope. Because I think any other person would have said, hey, she's getting a little like manic pixie dream girl here. Not that she's like manic, but that she's got that role. Like, why is she in here?
Aspect to it,
yeah, is she only here to motivate him and then get captured so he can rescue her? Like, if so, let's do something more interesting, you know? Because there's so much talent on display here, especially in the just making gross-ass special effects that are practical. The score in this is gorgeous, too. I really enjoyed the synth score.
Yo, yeah.
Turns out I never get sick of a synth score. I am the easiest mark in the world for that. Speaking of which, Captain Marvel score. Great choice.
Oh my gosh. And just the soundtrack too. The soundtrack is fantabulous.
Mm.
Although, you know, one little, because I can't not say it out loud. One of the things that we discussed when we got back to the house, we went to go see Captain Marvel, was that, like, you know what there's not in Captain Marvel? There's not a romantic relationship. There are relationships that matter and are important and have value, but they're not romantic ones.
Yeah.
And there's even one between a male character and a female character. And there's no double entendres or sex-related anything. Like, it's just you can have relationships with people that are other than just romantic. And God, is that awesome. It's just like, man, there's so many things that are satisfying about it. But that was certainly one of them. And it's like, man, how cool.
It's kind of weird, that the way that you make something like that work, the highest compliment I can pay a movie like that is, it is a movie that the plot doesn't change significantly if you change her into a guy, which is good, because it means they didn't make it a stereotypical girl story. I mean, the fact that she is female gives it an extra, gives some scenes extra poignancy, and gives her, you know, like, it feels even more righteous when she just force blasts dude and says, "I don't owe you anything. I don't have to prove myself to you. Like, yes.
Oh.
But, you know, it's the same thing I said with Moana. Like, this is essentially what's typically been a boy's adventure story, just with a female lead. So she doesn't have to have a romantic relationship, and she gets to go on a big adventure and kick all kinds of ass, and that's awesome. Like, we need more stories like that. We need fewer stories that end like Sequence Break.
That's why with Sequence Break, I just feel like I would have really loved more Data and more story with her character. You know, because, like, the only thing we really get with her is that, like, her talking to somebody about, or talking to the bartender about how she's looking at her phone and she's waiting for somebody, she's waiting for him to call back. And the bartender's like, "This guy's a lot of trouble," and whatever. And it's like, and so the one conversation she has with other human in the runtime of the movie is pretty much just about Chase's character. And it's just like, but we don't know necessarily where she goes to work or where she likes to have lunch or any of her other friends or any of her, like, you know, talents or whatever. And it doesn't have to be like some 4-hour-long character examination. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the before sunset, midnight series from Linklater or whatever. But it's like, you know, just something else, you know, just take her character and run with it. Because if you get somebody as talented as she is, like, yeah, use it, you know, Pete's sakes.
For sure. So for this, like, I don't want to be overly punitive on it because it just, like, 3/4 of it is really neat. And just plain fails to land in a spectacular fashion. So, it could have been, like, it would have been around a 7, 7.5 with, if it had landed it. So I'll just say 6 out of 10, flicking the joysticks.
Ew. No.
Rubbing the nubs.
I'll go. Lining up the quarters. I would say about the same thing. I mean, it's just sort of like, you know, there's enough going right and enough worthwhile that, you know, definitely makes you want to get more out of it, you know, which I guess is a kind of an endorsement in that sense. And certainly, just from a dorky standpoint, like, you got to admire, like, some of the work with the wiring and the kind of pulsating goo things and, like, just all the sort of weird organic aspects of it that just, you know, just feel very much like a Videodrome thing or like, there's just a lot of whatnot going on with those kind of things. And yeah, fair play for sure. So, you know, so I'll say, yeah, I guess I'll say, I think 6 sounds about right. So I'll say, pardon me, I'll say 6 out of 10. I'll say 6 out of 10. How do you not have a phone? Like, how is that? How do you not have a phone, man? Like, that's good gravy. Like, when he said that, he was like, "Yeah, I don't really have, like, a phone." I was like,
That's something that I don't know if you can get away with in a movie that's set in 2018. If it's, unless he's homeless. Because he would at least need, like, a track phone or something. The hipster thing that they're going for there should be that he has a flip phone or something, you know, like Gyllenhaal does in Velvet Buzzsaw. But to have him just like
a home line or like a home line with no answer machine or just something, something, you know, Pete's sakes.
Hey, even a landline, just a landline, I think would be an unbelievable level of affectation now. Like, I don't know anybody who just has no cell phone whatsoever. So, that was a thing, like, I don't know if you can get away with that. Maybe in a movie set like 10 years ago, maybe. But now there are so many that are cheap enough and cheaper than a landline even, that it seems like even somebody who's like riding their unicycle to the artisanal vinyl store is going to have one.
What's that whole thing like? It was in Kissing Jessica Stein where, you know, she like doesn't believe in cell phones and this, that, whatever else. And then she's like, you know, she's like something about having like, you know, the best thing is you can reach me by pager or whatever else and blah, 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 blah. And using a computer for things. And it's like, it's of the time to a certain degree, but it's like, it's not necessarily selling out to just be like reachable by other humans. Like, I mean, unless you're living in like a Mennonite community, sort of. I don't know. Instead of like, I didn't get a Mennonite vibe from him, so I didn't think that was the deal.
No, Mennonites are not known for working on arcade games. I feel like, just they're limited to like skee ball. Maybe like Pachinko.
I do love the image of like doing like a kind of barn raising, but they're kind of raising up the sides of the game, you know? It's like.
Just, now I'm picturing like a life size reenactment of Donkey Kong, where there's just a huge dude at the top of a like multi story structure hucking barrels down a series of ladders. That's the game that you play. It's like, oh shit, I got the hammer, but now the barrels are on fire. Yeah, it's no good.
Okay. It really becomes a really, really tricky thing when you get to the fourth level and they got fish crawling down the ropes. And it's like, really bad news.
Where did you even get those? It's so weird.
Yeah, fish could climb ropes or descend ropes for that matter.
And like Amish Cubert will just give you a headache. It's the geometry there. It's no good.
It's a great image, though. It's a great mental image.
Send in your favorite examples of what Amish video games would be to our home office, because the Amish are not going to be offended by our podcast because they don't know it exists.
That's true. That is super true.
Hey, we kid the Amish. We're going to tell you what. We're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back with things that we are going to watch for you next week. So bye.
That's true.
So next week, we are just picking some movies at random, as we do sometimes when there's not something that jumps out and says, you must be watching me. So we are going to watch a flick called Reflecting Skin. That's, is that early 2000s, Charlie? I should know these things before I start. Anyway, it's got Viggo Mortensen in it. It's a thing. Then we're also going to watch The New Kids, which is an 80s movie that features timingly appropriate enough, Lori Loughlin, and also James Spader, which should be fantastic. And then we're going to watch Seven in Heaven, which is a PG-13 teenage horror movie, which is probably horrible, but why not? You know, it's on Netflix. You got to take a chance every now and again. And our short is called I Love Sarah Jane, and that will be linked in the show notes. And beyond that, I will point out to you that I have been Josh this entire time, and Matt has been gone this entire time and is not sorry, but we'll hopefully have him in next week.
That's true. This is Charlie down in Austin. Pardon me. This is Charlie down in Austin. Take care. Have a good. Take care. Have a good week, and we'll talk towards you again real soon. Take care of yourselves. Bye bye.